Palestinian economy is endemically weak. This is mainly due to the split geography of the Palestinian economy between the West Bank and Gaza. Political instability and conflict exacerbate the problems of Palestine's underdeveloped economy. For example, by 2008, the unemployment rate reached 71% in the Gaza Strip. By 2011, there was an overall poverty rate between the West Bank and Gaza of roughly 25%. Given these pre-existing challenges and the new economic threats posed by the COVID-19 pandemic, it is worth asking the question, what are the stumbling blocks of Palestinian development and how can we overcome them? The Oxford Society for International Development is honoured to have Professor Bashar Malkawi joining us for a podcast today to discuss the issue of Palestinian economic underdevelopment. Bashar is a global professor of law at the University of Arizona and is an expert on the World Trade Organization and regional trade agreements. He's written extensively about Palestinian economic underdevelopment, both about its causes and potential solutions. I'd just like to say thank you for joining us today again, Bashar. It's a pleasure to have you.
The pleasure is mine. Thank you so much. And for the Oxford Society for International Development for this opportunity. And we hope can contribute to the discussion advanced by the society.
I suppose the best place to begin is at the origins. So could you please tell us about the origins of Palestinian economic underdevelopment?
Yes, for sure. Now, if you look back into history, you'll see that the Palestinian economic problem mainly and squarely stems from the Israeli occupation of the West Bank and the Gaza Strip. And over the years, Israel has integrated the Palestinian economy with the Israeli economy. So as a matter of fact, it's sort of one economy. And when the Palestinian Authority tried to join the World Trade Organization, the discussion was that it would be easy for the Palestinian economy to join this international organization because they have the same sort of customs union as Israel. But unfortunately, Israel controls the dynamics of the Palestinian economy. So Israel controls the channels for export and imports of products that will have to go through Israel. Also, this not only applies for goods, but also for services. In addition, we've seen that a large percentage of the Palestinian labor force is employed in Israel. So all these issues are mingled with politics. So this state of affairs has subjected the Palestinian economy to the whims of the political climate between the Israelis and the Palestinians. I would argue that the export-driven economy growth, if any, by the Palestinian Authority would never develop because of this type of dependence on the Israeli economy, as well as the repeated border closures, which creates uncertainty for those merchants or traders. One final thing I would say that the Israeli economy is one of the biggest in the region. It's one of the advanced compared with other economies like the EU or other countries. So it's more oriented toward the European Union and the North African market rather than the local market or the Palestinian market or other Arab countries. So these are some of the origins of this state of affairs for the Palestinian economy.
So that explains sort of, you know, the origins of the state of affairs of the Palestinian economy. But what do you think are sort of like the key driving factors or the individual driving factor that sort of perpetuates this weakness of the Palestinian economy today?
I would argue that there are two main factors that perpetuate this state of affairs and the weakness in the Palestinian economy. And these would be the limited nature of investment as well as the weak private sector job creation. So basically for the Palestinian authorities or territories, you have two economies, the one in the city of Ramallah, which would be the state headquarters and the powerhouse of the Palestinian Authority. So you see all the types of investment, all the types of foreign aid flowing into Ramallah. And you have the other types of cities and towns which live below the level of poverty which can be characterized by a weak job creation, limited investment, and high unemployment rate. So, and one thing I would say also that for many Palestinians, they prefer to be employed in the public sector. And as a matter of fact, if you look at the percentage of how many employees are employed in the public sector, it's a huge chunk of the large percentage of labor force of the Palestinian economy. And this has to do, of course, on political affiliation, which political affiliation the employee adapts. So if he follows, for example, Fatah political group, he might have a better chance of finding a government job. So this created sort of an interior state. So I would say that in order to build a strong economy, the Palestinian Authority should adopt a sort of investment regime that can invite foreign investment. They should try to renegotiate political issues with Israel so they can enjoy open borders and a free movement of goods and labor.
On this issue, sort of like speaking about what potentially the Palestinian authorities could do, what role do you think corruption within the Palestinian authorities actually plays in sort of preventing this substantial economic development?
Like any country, the Palestinian Authority suffers from corruption and nepotism. It's quite widespread. Also, you have the security apparatus, which controls pretty much everything in the Palestinian affairs. Now, there are wide reported examples of corruption cases where money that donated by some countries that should have been invested in some areas were deposited in private banks. So you see many of these instances. Of course, one this point should be high on the agenda of the Palestinian Authority to build the confidence of foreign investors and foreign donors so they could send money again to help stimulate the Palestinian economy.
Thank you. And how do you think the COVID-19 pandemic has impacted the Palestinian economic development?
Well, obviously, the Palestinian territories and authority, like any other state, were affected by COVID-19. But what's distinguished this time that the Palestinian economy were accustomed to political crisis, but this is the first time that we've seen that the Palestinian economy is subject to this nature of health crisis. So, of course, for those who are involved in Palestinian affairs, you know that tourism play an important role in the budget of the state. So as a result of the lockdown that was mandated by the government in West Bank and Gaza, we've seen a dwindling number of tourists coming to Ramallah and Beit Lahem for Christmas and other occasions. So this the pandemic has devastated the tourism sector. Also, we've seen rise in the number of unemployment both in Israel and the Palestinian territories. And as I just said before, a large chunk of the labor force work in Israel. And so with this type of closure or lockdown, we've seen dwindling numbers of employers who are seeking Palestinians labor. In terms of, if you look at the statistics, you'll see that there is a decline in donor funding, and you'll see also that the economy is expected to slip into recession in 2020 and 2022. So there, the economic situation is horrible, but we're hopeful that things will be better with the vaccination rolling out sometime, perhaps later this year.
And just sort of on this issue of vaccination, I mean, Israel's done quite a good job of being able to sort of vaccinate quite a large portion of its population so far. And there is sort of like this asymmetry between Israel and Palestine. How do you think that is going to sort of reflect in the economic growth sort of post-COVID between the two economies?
Yes, as you just said, that Israel is running out the vaccination fast. It's expected to vaccinate pretty much most of the population by the end of the spring, this coming spring. But if you look on the other side of the border, you'll see that on a daily basis, rising number of those people, Palestinian people, were affected by COVID-19, who transmitted this disease, and those who were in the hospital. And that's why you see even this discrepancy of treatment between the two sides, although they live on the same land, but nevertheless, you see that Israel is doing much better. Of course, this has to do with the strength of their economy and their position, while the Palestinian Authority is sort of, its hand is tied, and they're waiting for donation from other countries to help them out for in the vaccination effort, like donations coming from the UAE and Jordan, among other countries.
Perfect, thank you. So now we've sort of outlined sort of like what the issues are surrounding the Palestinian economic underdevelopment and sort of what the issues are today. Could you sort of outline some of the previously proposed solutions to the Israeli-Palestinian conflict and how those proposed solutions have sort of tried to help rebuild the Palestinian economy?
The peace process started in the early 1990s, and it was successfully concluded by the Oslo Agreement 1 and the Oslo 2 Agreement in 1995. So there were a lot of hope that this would mean the end of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, that this will usher a new period of economic prosperity. And those who drafted these agreements, obviously, these political agreements, obviously knew that these political documents would not be successful unless there is a mix with economics, unless there was sort of economic stimulus put into these agreements so that prosperity will lead to further peace and stability in the region. But unfortunately, over the years, things deteriorated. We've seen that as a result of the conflict, the ongoing between the Palestinians and Israelis, these political agreements did not mature enough so that reflect economic situation that is better for both parties. So we've seen that there is a dwindling in the amount of aid coming from other countries, coming from international organizations such as the World Bank. We've seen that even the Palestinian Authority has to blame, where for some occasions they utilized this type of international aid as emergency funding rather than using for long-term or mid-term infrastructure projects that have a lingering effect on the economy. We've seen also over the years the Israeli border closures, which wrecked the Oslo objective of creating close economic relationship between the Israelis and the Palestinians. There is also sort of mismanagement of funds by the Palestinian authority. There is a little role for the private sector to play in this state of affair. So all these factors tied to politics. I would say that despite all good faith efforts to bring economic prosperity for the Palestinian people, this will not bring and be fruitful unless there is a political solution for the conflict between the Palestinians and the Israelis.
Well, given sort of the recent peace accords between Israel and Bahrain and UAE, firstly, how do you think they will sort of impact Palestinian economic development? And do you think that this is maybe the beginning of some sort of peace between Israel and Palestine, which could potentially usher in more economic growth for Palestine?
I think there is a chance of some sort of economic development as a result of the Abraham peace accords between Israel on the one hand and the UAE and Bahrain on the other hand. But I would say and argue that these benefits will be fairly squarely disputed between the Israelis and the UAE and Bahrain. And if you look, if you compare these peace agreements with the ones held with Egypt and Jordan, who have or which have close borders with the Palestinians and Israelis, nevertheless, these older peace agreements did not provide the economic prosperity that one hoped would provide. So I'm not very much optimistic that these Abraham Accords will provide direct benefits for the for the Palestinian economy, bearing in mind that Israel has the same economic strength as the UAE and Bahrain. So there is more to do with one-on-one trade relationship between the Israelis and the and UAE and Bahrain rather than with the Palestinian Authority. It depends also on how the Palestinian Authority would accept these peace agreements, if there would be forthcoming for these type of peace agreements, they may enjoy some of these benefits, although I would argue these are limited because of the nature of the economic relationship between Israel on the one hand and UAE and Bahrain on the other hand.
Thank you. And so I guess my final question is about what role do you think China or Chinese investment potentially has going forward, given their rise to superpower status in the world? Do you think they have a potential growing role in the Palestinian economy or in sort of like the Middle East in general?
Obviously, China is a major player in international affairs and international economics, and we've seen a warm relationship between China and other Middle Eastern countries and Israel and even the Palestinian Authority. I would use the example of the Belt and Road Initiative. This is an initiative developed by China. We're trying to spread sea and port and land infrastructure projects and utilize it to enhance trade among some sort of European countries, some countries in Asia and Africa. You could argue that this is part of Chinese economic hegemony, but we're not talking about this here. Let's have good faith in this type of initiative. Palestinian Authority is on the radar of China for this project. I haven't seen any progress with regard to this initiative in the Palestinian territories themselves, rather than China is going to develop ports in Tel Aviv and other Israeli port areas. So we've seen a closer relationship and cooperation between the Israelis and the Chinese government, and where the Chinese government relies on Israeli technology and trade and investment with Israel. Now, there were back in 2018 trade negotiations between China and the Palestinian Authority so as to conclude the free trade area. But although there was a signing ceremony about memorandum of understanding, but nevertheless there is no such trade deal as such. So I would argue that the type and nature of Chinese investment in the Palestinian economy would be limited and the focus will be more on Israel, but there could be spillover effects in terms of employing more Palestinians in the Israeli economy as a result of Belt and Road Initiative and other China-Israel trade and investment relationship.
Thank you very, very much, Bashar. I think you've answered all of my questions about Palestinian economic underdevelopment, and it's been really fascinating talking to you about Palestine, about the Palestinian economy and Palestinian economic underdevelopment. So I just want to thank you again for joining us.
Thank you so much, Shariq, and thank you for the Oxford Society for hosting me in this podcast. And I hope I contribute somewhat to the Palestinian economic affair in this segment. And I hope I would see you in the future. Thank you so much.